This is Radio Ghana.
Live from the National Studios in Broadcasting House here in Accra, my name is George Asikri with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest updates and detailed analysis of current happenings in Ghana. Tonight, workers of defunct UT and Capital Banks sacked. How lawful is this action? We find out. Police in Ashanti region arrest some small-scale miners for demonstrating over moratorium placed on their operations. Tonight, we hear from the police as well as the demonstrators. And President Nana Akufo-Addo gives the green light for implementation of free senior high school with proceeds from natural resources. How sustainable will this be? We find out shortly. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our show tonight. Our text line is 0266-026-941. Welcome back. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana and we are live on all our FM stations across the country to our very first story. Having a dedicated and reliable source of funding for the implementation and sustainability of the free senior high school policy has dominated discussions in the media since the president, Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo's famous Equipment Declaration early this year. Launching the free senior high school program at the West Africa Senior High School at Adentan here in Accra today, the president declared, and I quote, "We have dedicated to use the proceeds from our natural resources to help educate the population to drive our economic transformation. Instead of the revenues from our natural resources and oil resources ending up in the hands of a few people, the most equitable and progressive way of using these resources is to educate and empower our population to strengthen our nation." Unquote. In doing this, we will be on the way to achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goal number 4, which calls for inclusive and equitable education and the promotion of lifelong opportunities for all, the president added today. And so, by implication, the free senior high school has taken off. Funding is expected to come from so many sources, including our natural resources. But the question many are asking is, how sustainable are these sources of funding? We have on the line the campaign coordinator of ISODEC and a member of the Public Interest and Accountability Committee, Dr. Steve Mantiao. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to be on your program.
Doc, it is sounding like excitement all over the country with the first day officially of the free senior high school policy. But sustainability of the policy is what many are asking. The president has indicated that funding will also come from our natural resources. And since you work a lot in these areas, what is your take on that?
Well, thank you very much. And let me say that I'm happy that the president has indicated that is going to leverage some resources from our natural resource sector to support the free NHS program. Indeed, FIAC early in the year convened a national forum on sustainable financing of the free NHS. And this was one of the recommendations that came out of the forum. It was recognized that already some of our natural resource revenues go into financing education in this country, particularly cocoa. We know, I think there are about over 12,000 Ghanaian students who are on Cocoa Scholarship, the CMB, or is it Cocoa Board Scholarship? Again, you find that particularly in 2015, oil revenues were used in financing everything education. Indeed, the Mohammed, former President Mohammed's 200 secondary school project was partly funded with oil revenue. Again, there was oil revenue used to pay B, C subsidy, textbooks, chalk, school laboratories, dormitories, capitation grant, school feeding, school uniform. Almost everything education in 2015 was financed with oil revenue. Between 2011 to 2016, as much as 70 million Ghana cedis has been spent on education in this country, I mean, coming from oil revenues. The difference between what the current government is intending to do, however, is that we are seeking to prioritize education above almost everything. And for this term alone, that's the last quarter alone, as much as 290 million Ghana cedis, far in excess of what we spent in the last 6 years on education, has been budgeted to be spent on free SHS. Given what we have seen at PIAC, the abuses in the uses of revenues from the oil sector, the ghost projects, the poorly executed projects and all that, which in my view does not give us value for money, I would welcome the suggestion that we use oil revenue to support free SHS. But I think that it is equally important to look at other natural resources. The gold, the timber, in addition to cocoa, should also make a certain fair contribution to this laudable initiative. I think we have developed a paper in which we have indicated other sources of income or revenue for this project. I think government is minded to take a closer look at it. I think they can borrow a lot of ideas from there to make sure that this experiment succeeds.
Looking at it from afar, it does appear that other sectors may suffer as a result of the priority we're giving to education.
It is precisely so, and it has been my considered view that perhaps it would have helped if we had taken a bite at a time at this free SHS and not to go at the scale we are going currently. I'm guided in my submission by the experience of Uganda and also Kenya, the two other African countries that have experimented with free SHS on the continent. And I know in the particular case of Uganda, the implementation has been fraught with a lot of challenges, even though the government is committed to spending just $52 on each student in Uganda. But the Ugandan experience does not cover everything the way we are doing. It covers just the tuition fee for students. And parents also contribute in the form of textbooks and exercise books for their children. And I believe that if God were to go that way, it would have actually conserved some resources for also other badly needed developmental projects. And I make the point that, look, if you were to spend all the oil revenue on just education, these children will come out of education and they will have no means of employment, because you haven't used part of the resources to create the jobs. And for a country that is actually borrowing to feed itself, I think it was a bit ambitious to have gone the scale we have. But be that as it may, we all have a responsibility to contribute ideas in terms of how we can get out of this rather very difficult situation.
These resources are perishable. They are not there in perpetuity. If in the unlikely event that we do not get as much as expected, will it in any way affect the smooth running of the program?
Yeah, it will. And I go by the experience of Uganda. There have been times where schools were supposed to open and government disbursements have not gone through. And so headmasters of the secondary schools in Uganda refused to actually reopen. And so, Karen, as I speak with you, we have the private sector really serving as a stopgap measure And so most Ugandans who can afford really to pay private tuition are removing their awards from the public sector and sending them to the private sector in terms of the secondary education. And so if we're not careful, this is what may happen in the country. It may get to a point where there may be difficulties in terms of releases of funds to finance this project. And if that happens, it will affect the quality of tuition, but even sustainability of secondary school education. And in that instance, I'm pretty sure the rich and those who can afford will begin to look for options outside the public system.
Is it ideal for us to start looking at having a committee or an independent body that will be responsible for seeing to the sustainable implementation of this program?
Well, it may help, but in my view, we already have a facility we can leverage to do this, and that is the GET Fund. It is my view that the GET Fund has been abused over the years. This is the time we take another look at the GET Fund. But it is receiving 2.5% of VAT in this country into that fund. But there's been very little accountability, and I suspect there's been a lot of abuses, even in the award of projects and contracts with GET Fund resources. To the extent that 2015, oil revenue was used for everything education, raises the question as to what GET Fund indeed financed in that year. And so I think we need to pry that open and use the GET Fund arrangement, get proper fund managers, who will receive all other resources. Now, I want to challenge government to look for other resources. Corporate social responsibility budgets of companies can be directed partly. If you can get the companies to support this project, they will set aside part of their budget for corporate social responsibility in supporting education. Those should be received by a common fund. In fact, all the budgetary resources that are being set aside for free SHS, in my view, should go into the GET Fund, so that we are able to track and ensure that they are used effectively and efficiently.
Are you by then implying that we should use part of GET Fund for free senior high school?
No, I do not subscribe to the situation where you have one budgetary resources for free senior high school, and then you have GET Fund set aside also to support infrastructure in the education sector. I think we can pull all of them together as one common fund to support education. That is infrastructure and also delivery of services in the education sector, which includes free senior high school.
Right. Doc, I want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News. Very grateful.
Most welcome.
Dr. Steve Mantiao is the campaign coordinator of ISODEC and a member of the Public Interest and Accountability Committee, PIAC. This is Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941. We also have on the line the head of the Department of Finance, University of Cape Coast Business School, Dr. John Gachi. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Doc, if we were, all things being equal, to depend on our natural resources to fund the free senior high school policy, how sustainable would that be?
Well, the sustainability will depend on how the revenue management is structured. It also depends on whether we'll continue to produce these natural resources in the volumes that are expected and whether prices will continue to behave in our favor. These are the things that will indicate whether it will be sustainable. But as it is, there are specific rules governing the use of natural resource revenue, particularly oil. As it is now, it is very difficult, unless the law is changed, to use, let's say, about 50% of the annual budget funding amount to support the free SHS, which I doubt will be the case. So it is the issue of sustainability will continue to be something if we do not come together as a country, look at it holistically, in order to ensure that this program will not be like the way tertiary education has become. We all do know that in the past, tertiary education used to be free, completely free, but because of issues of financial sustainability, we have to introduce a payment at a point, and then now the payment system is actually dominating in many areas. So I think the issue of sustainability ought to be looked at not only from the point of view of what government thinks it can do, but what the economy can support.
Some people may also argue that as part of measures for sustainability, we should consider making the tertiary level education full fee paying so that the basic level can have enough resources to run. Is that a viable option?
That would not be meaningful in the face of the challenges that we face in the country. For example, our educational system is not such that when you complete SHS, for example, you can easily get access to job and begin to earn income, for which we can assume that many people exit at that point and then they begin to work and prepare for tertiary education when they feel that they have income or they have enough money to pay for it. So that would be a very difficult situation to put the country in. We also do know that we do not have the industrial sector, the business sector, so robust to absorb the number of people who come out from our tertiary education. So in the first place, how will people be able to raise the money to do full fee paying in tertiary system? I am in the tertiary sector. I know what happened. Even 3,000, some people cannot pay. 1,005, it is difficult for people to pay. So how are you going to make a tertiary education full fee paying? I think you are going to distort a lot of things for the system.
Is it not a matter of priority? I don't know of where you are, but here in Accra, people are paying, parents are paying as high as 5,000 for primary school for their awards, and they are okay.
So that is, the elite in society. But we are talking about Ghana. We are talking about the population. We are not talking about few rich people who can pay such high fees at primary level, at all the levels of the educational ladder. We are considering the people of Ghana. So that is where our attention should be focused. I think we need to look at this whole issue from away from politics. We all do know that this thing is already part of our constitution. We already know that all the political parties believe that there should be a free SHS or free education in the country. It's only that their philosophy or the approach to it is different. So that agreement is there. Why can't we come together as a nation to find a way of financing this particular system in a sustainable manner that will help all of us? In some other countries that these things are done, I believe they use the tax system to do it, and that become more fairer. My argument is that if you take the Minister of Finance or you take all the ministers who have their children enjoying free education with a baba, I do not think that is fair. But if you introduce a tax, an indirect tax, for example, and these people are contributing more and they are benefiting from free SHS, and the baba's son or child is also benefiting from it, that becomes fairer. So I think we should be very bold, engage all the stakeholders, using a task approach to financing free SHS. It's more sustainable, in my opinion, than moving from natural resource, moving from oil money, moving from heritage fund to annual budget funding amount, meeting disagreement from the population. I think that will not be the way forward.
Doc, I'm just wondering, thinking aloud, I'm looking at Venezuela before Hugo Chavez was elected. Democracy was good. Everybody was excited about what was happening there. This man came and things reversed. By implication, we may have a president dedicated and committed to education. What happens in the future if we do not get a president with similar commitment and dedication?
Well, that fear should not be entertained because, as I said earlier on, all the political parties that we have seen have spoken in favor of free education. And we have seen NDC, for example, talk about progressively free education. They have started something in that direction, and this has been enhanced by the current government. So I do not anticipate that, assuming a new government comes into power, they are going to do anything that will actually destabilize this particular policy. They may be seeking ways to enhance and better manage what have been put in place to it. So sustainability in terms of continuing the program, I think that that is assured. But what is not assured is how we are going to fund it into perpetuity. That is what we should be talking about.
All right.
That also brings to mind the quest to focus the entire funding on the oil money, because oil is depletable. Price fluctuation can affect your revenue stream, and the production difficulty can affect your the income you are going to get from oil. So we need to put all these things into the discussion before we put our trust in the oil revenue.
All right, Doc, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful.
Thank you.
Dr. John Gatti is the head of the Department of Finance, University of Cape Coast Business School. We also have on the line the Public Relations Officer of the Ghana Education Service, Reverend Jonathan Bette. Good evening, Reverend, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my good brother.
Well, we have begun free senior high school. Yesterday, your boss was here and he said everything is ready. Today, we are talking of funding. For you in Ghana Education Service, what do you see as a possible challenge?
Well, thank you very much. As you rightly said, Ghana Education Service is the policy implementer, and the policy maker is the Ministry of Education and the government. Now, we are relying on government to resource all the schools as we began yesterday, most especially today being a special day in the life of Ghanaian children. Now, the policy has been launched. It's our prayer that financially the government will be sound. And from all indications, as the president rightly said, is going to fund the education with the resources that we have in this country, which we are also believing that he will use those resources and fund education. Sustainability of the policy is very assured, and we have all welcomed the policy with its sustainability, with the resources that the government promised. We will do our best. If there is any challenge, we will draw the attention of the Ministry of Education to the Minister of Finance, and then we believe in that they will resource us to sustain the policy for Ghanaian.
I want to thank you very much, Reverend, for your time on our show. Very grateful.
Thank you.
Reverend Jonathan Bette is the Public Relations Officer of the Ghana Education Service. We have also on the line the Communications Director of the Progressive People's Party, PPP, Pako Akon. Good evening, Pa, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George, and thank you for having me.
Your party talks a lot about free education, and you have even added compulsory to it. I'm sure part of your work has been done by the current government, but the issue is the sustainability of funding. The president has indicated that part of our natural resources will be used to fund the policy. How does the PPP take it?
Well, thank you very much, George. And let me use your platform to wish your listeners a very good evening. First of all, let me say that the PPP believes that the Hydra-headed problems which confront our educational system ought to be checked. And as you have rightly indicated, funding is a critical issue. In respect of the free education, you realize that we have over-politicized this issue. And the over-politicization of this issue is what we have seen in already increasing expenditure. As you may be aware, a logo has been launched already and a secretariat has been set up. All this is going to add to the cost, the needless cost, which we believe should have been avoided. And then coming to the question, of course, we promised that we are going to provide free education from the kindergarten all the way to the senior high school. And the PPP believes that we have enough money to do this. if you take the 2015 Auditor General's report, you realize that it cost the state over 3.3 billion Ghana cedis. Are we saying that if we block all the leakages in our system, we will not have money to fund education in this country? It is simply a matter of setting our priorities right. Every day we hear of money going under the bridge, and nobody cares. Nobody cares. We believe that we should not even touch the oil money. If we should stay on course, if we should be vigilant in our own right, we know that we will be able to generate enough from the system to fund our education.
When you paint the picture as if nobody cares, will you then be fair to successive governments?
No, nobody cares. I mean, every year we hear about Auditor General's report. This is in respect of those who work in the public sector. We hear of the ministries, money's going under the dredge. And it seems we are only interested in discussing the issue without punishing people. People steal money and they get away with it. For how long can this continue?
But going to the Auditor General report, it doesn't give the picture that people really take the money and spend. They spend the money in areas that they were not supposed to spend. I'm supposed to buy balls for my office and I spend the money, say, buying furniture. That is still quite productive, due and lawful.
Yeah, but if something is unlawful, it ought to be punished. if you misapply the taxpayers' money, must you be allowed to go? You should be punished. It is the same thing. And so we believe that the oil money must not be touched at all because we have enough money in our system in this country. All we need to do is to be vigilant and to ensure that people who steal from the state are dealt with. Yeah. If we can apply the law and if people get to know that if you steal under this administration, you are not going to be let go. People will be serious and they will not misapply state funds.
So what is left for the PPP now that the government has done virtually everything when it comes to education, senior high school?
Unfortunately, the government has not done everything. What the government has failed to do is to cancel the BEC. Because as we speak, over 3,000 children have been thrown out of the schooling system. They've been asked to go and resit. And research has shown that the children who resit exams, quite often 90% of them still fail. So there is no point in that. All we are saying is that let us scrap the BEC. If a child starts school from the kindergarten, he should end at the secondary or the technical school. That, if we're able to do, we can guarantee a prosperous future.
What would then be the mode or the criteria for placing the children into secondary schools?
You know, this basic or the GSS concept was something we picked, President Rawlings picked from the Cubans. And if you know how the Cuban system works, after the GSS, they don't write any external exams. All they do is that they write a continuous assessment just as a child would do from class 6 to GSS 1. And then based on the score, the internal exam, based on that, the school determines which of the children should do science, which of them should do art, which of them should do business. That concept, we unfortunately did not learn it properly from the Cubans. And so we brought in this WAEC, and WAEC is using a star 9 grading system, which deprives many children the right to pursue higher education.
All right. Pa, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Pa Kaw Akon is the communication director of the PPP. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. We will be back after this break. Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Two other stories. GCB Bank is terminating the appointment of some 1,000 workers of the collapsed UT and Capital Banks. The receiver of GCB Bank, PricewaterhouseCoopers, issued letters to the staff of the two defunct banks today. According to the receiver, any claim of the workers in regards to salary arrears, wages, leave, severance pay and other entitlements will be dealt with in accordance with provisions of the Labour Act 2003, Act 651. The Bank of Ghana on August 14 revoked the license of UT and Capital Banks after they approved the purchase and assumption with GCB Bank Limited that transfers all deposits and selected assets of UT Bank Limited and Capital Bank Limited to GCB Bank Limited. So what is the implication of this action? We have on the line the General Secretary of the Industrial and Commercial Workers Union, ICU, Solomon Kote. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you so much, my regards to your listeners.
Has it officially reached you news that workers of the defunct UT and Capital Banks are being sacked?
Well, just as it has been carried in the news, is how we have heard it. At the moment, we have not, because they are not our members. They don't belong to any union at the time of the takeover. So official correspondence will not come to us in that manner.
So does it mean that ICU will not or cannot play any role in this regard?
We have the capacity to assist them. As many who have run to us and are seeking assistance, we are directing them as what to do, because what has happened is the first of its kind in this country, where a sovereign, independent, you know, institution should be taken over by another sovereign institution by reason of a policy from the central bank. We have not witnessed it. This is the first time. What we are seeing could be the issues is that the condition of service as existed under UT Bank and then the Capital Bank, is GCB going to apply same, or GCB is going to apply what conditions it has under its condition of service? At least, for what we know, GCB has got a collective agreement as a union. Are they going to apply that on their behalf, or they are going to treat each of these two separate institutions, UT and Capital Bank, on their own condition of service under which they were employed? These are issues that at least our lawyers and labor experts will be looking into, whether it is possible to treat them the way they have done. And if this termination is also going to be in the form of a redundancy pay, where they'll be given some reasonable amount of money to go. And those who have come to ICU, we shall offer them the industrial relations services that we have at our disposal, and then also join our lawyers to see what can be done on their part.
Ideally, if they were unionized staff, what would have been the implication?
Obviously, this would mean that there is a total redundancy. The job is collapsed. Everybody is to go home. If they are under a union, then either the package is already negotiated, or this is the time the management and the union will enter into negotiations. We'll look at the severance, how many months' salary can be paid for each given year. And then we'll look at things like repatriation, we'll look at things like handshake, we'll look at things like Medicare, because they just stopped the work at the stroke of the employer's decision, and therefore they cannot be left like that. So Medicare supply could be given to them for either a year, or in cash could be paid to them. So we'll have gone through the normal redundancy negotiation assistance. But now that we didn't have a union, they might look for some consultants or for some lawyers to go in and see whether or not the takeover also gives GCB the right to apply its own conditions to them. So it's going to be interesting in the coming days if indeed the dismissal of the 1,000 workers is a real issue.
But in labor practice, we heard the managing director of GCB Bank, when the takeover began, that there will be skills assessment before retaining or rejecting workers of the defunct banks. Today, it is not the case. Can he be taken on for, quote unquote, not being truthful to the workers?
Well, what we are saying is that there is total reorganization at Commercial Bank. The reorganization at Commercial Bank is a takeover of the UT and Capital Bank. What he said initially was to take away the knee-jerk approach, where it became obvious that people were running thinking that their money should be off from the bank, so the panic withdrawal. He said he made those statements just to calm everybody down. Because obviously, the philosophy of CCB operations is totally different from what we have at UT and Capital Bank. So reality is not dawning on them. Commercial bank, how many staff do we keep at the branch? How much is UT keeping? We cannot operate on that strength. What is the capacity of clientele base in each branch? What do we do? So obviously, some of us were aware that there is certainly going to be a layoff. And the key issue now is, under what conditions are these workers being laid off? Is it the conditions under which they were employed under those respective banks? But technically, those banks are no more. Because when Commercial Bank took over, you notice they changed names, they changed logos, they changed, you know, everything around them. And therefore, in the coming days, I believe all the experts will put their heads together and see how those people who run to the various unions for help, we'll see how we can salvage them.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News. We are very grateful, sir. Solomon Kote is the General Secretary of the Industrial and Commercial Workers Union, ICU. Also joining us on the line is a labor consultant, Austin Game. Good evening, sir, and welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you, my brother.
Sir, the receiver in GCB takeover of UT and Capital Bank's Price Water Coopers has begun issuing termination letters to workers of the defunct banks. Where do we situate the labor law in this development?
Grateful. Yes, this case has to be situated where it belongs. In the first place, the case of the two banks is not about severance. It's not about negotiating redundancy pay. It's about a different ball game altogether. That is to say that under a different law, the Bodies Corporate Official Liquidation Act 1963, Act 180, specifically Section 41, the liquidator will have to assess the indebtedness of the two banks and classify them. And indeed, as far as the workers are concerned, they belong to the Class A, which means that if there is any outstanding remuneration not exceeding 4 months will be paid to them, or not more than 6,000 cedis. That is what officially is there. If it's been amended today, this is about 2014, 2 years ago. This is what they have been amended, and it's 6,000 cedis, or 4 months pay, but not exceeding 6,000 cedis. And then the second thing that also form part of the Class A is the rates, taxes, that they might owe government or local government authorities and other related matters. Specifically, this thing has happened before, and to some three banks, we negotiated using the necessary human feeling, as the case may be, not entirely setting aside the law. And so some efforts will be made to assist them. But unlike the numerous things that my brother enumerated a while ago, that may not feature. This is about bankruptcy. It's about insolvency. And so it will be treated under insolvency and not necessarily the Labor Act, because this is not a severance of legal working relationship between two parties and therefore necessitating the need to pay or negotiate a redundancy pay. This is not the case.
We have seen in the past, when such things happened, it appears they do the redundancy because they do not need the workers. But right after that, we see them employing new workers. Does the law allow that?
Well, definitely. I mean, the new employer, the supervising bank, Ghana GCB Bank, will have to decide to what the manpower requirements under the new establishment of two banks will be to enable them, request them to reapply. Because, mind you, this is insolvency liquidation, and therefore everybody is out. When you are coming in, you are coming in brand new. You have to reapply. They have to assess you and see whether you fall within the new vision of the new organization. And so it cannot be a game as usual before. We have to come to terms, and I pray that our investors and training institutions will begin teaching these things in depth so that people will understand that it is not the same. Liquidation is different, insolvency is different from severance of working relationship between two parties, and therefore necessitating, like I said, redundancy pay. These are two worlds of a difference. Some efforts can be made to sift the people, those that are of some value and can fulfill the vision of the new employer, they will take them on hand and retrain them to be able to perform. That's the way it is.
This year alone, we've heard a lot. Last year inclusive, the number goes up. We had TV3 sacking workers. We had Ecobank sacking workers. Now UT and Capital Bank's workers being sacked by the receiver banks. Do we have enough laws in this country when it comes to protecting the rights of workers, particularly those in the private sector?
I think we have. We have enough laws. Indeed, all the issues you were mentioning, aside that of TV3, which was a bit of a bizarre, that of Ecobank has its own merit because the people were not necessarily full-time employees of the company. There were people who engaged on some contract of a kind. That's what I heard. If that is the case, then it's not like they are permanent working people or have some contract that was running and was just abrogated along the line. If that is the case, then the Labour Commission protects them. So the Labour Commission is still very strong. They might not be working the way to the satisfaction of everybody, but they have an executive secretary and administrators there who are very capable, and they have the commissioners who are supposed to be there to help them. So they can go there always for support, or go to any consultant, or go to a trade union to give them a backing, as the case may be, if you think that they are doing you a disservice that way. But I think that all the cases that we have had so far, apart from the TV3 case, which went a bit bizarre, abnormal for my liking, the rest were fully in place. And if they need services, they need help, they should always go around and look for help.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on the show. But a quick one. Is it increasingly, employers are beginning to engage people on contract basis. Then when there's listing, they sack them on the basis that these are not permanent workers. What can be done about that?
Well, it does appear this is a holistic thing that must be understood by everybody. And I pray maybe if we have time one day we can go into the nitty-gritties of it. It's not part of the law. You can be engaged. In America today, you will hear an announcement that they have generated 237,000 jobs. Many of them are temporary jobs. They are not permanent jobs. They are contract jobs. They are contractual obligations in this thing. Even Japan, where they used to have lifelong business, they have stopped it. So the world is changing. Technology is changing. And if I have a computer now that can do a job that four people are doing, I don't need to keep four people. You know, I'm an employer. I have workers that work with me. I need them. I have to engage them. I have to honor them and respect them. And they do likewise. But I think that the most important thing here is people must be told the truth that in managing people, and managing business is about either profit or ensuring that you provide the best of services if it's just an NGO or some kind of service-related business. But I think that Ghanaians, unfortunately, in our anxiety to satisfy people, we assume that people cannot be employed on contract basis. You can be employed on contract basis. When the time comes and we have finished the construction of the road that for which I've engaged you for 18 months, I don't need to keep you. I don't need to keep you. Unfortunately, the kind of clarion call that we hear along the line is that they are employing people on contract basis. It's not entirely correct.
All right. So I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful. Austin Gama is a labor consultant. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Some of your texts. Some of your text messages: the NPP government has shamed its enemies who said free education cannot be possible, but today it is possible. God bless NPP and President Akufo-Addo. Jake NS Aye in Kaliu sent in this from the Upper West region. Matthias Tulesi in Hoe Volta region says free senior high school Akwaaba starting is not only important, but sustainability is the main issue as far as funding is concerned. We won't tolerate stories as we move along. Al-Hassan Wunwana in Wa says the commencement of free senior high school education for all Ghanaians is a good thing. It has come to affirm MPP's cherished desire in making education accessible to all and sundry. We now realize the free education policy is not a mere rhetoric, but a reality that has come to stay. In fact, I am comfortable with first-year free senior high school, but not free senior high school, the NPP criticized John Mahama's progressive senior high school program. X Dupac sent in that in. Hi, George. Ghanaians should applaud President Nana Addo for the wonderful job he has done. This is Sidu from Sang in the Northern Region. This is Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming. 0266-026-941. AU Farouk in Tamale says the conflicting statement about the free senior high school policy should be made clear to us. The program will see many challenges due to its bad foundation. George, good evening. Indeed, we welcome free senior high school and we pray it doesn't encounter many difficulties. Monica Cons in Navrongo. I support the government to use the natural resources to finance the free senior high school program. Napoleon in Tumu Sankofa. We are hungry. Our families are suffering. Our future looks bleak. For the past 6 months, only God knows what we have gone through. As small-scale miners, we are ready to comply with all the laws of the land, but we expect some fairness when it comes to the way we are treated. This reflects the cry of small-scale miners in the Ashanti region who hit the streets today to register their displeasure about the continued ban on their activities by government to sanitize the mining sector. A member of the demonstrators, Bismarck Okra, told journalists that the expiration of the six-month ban government has elapsed, yet government is not telling them anything about what they should do. So we have on the line Kwamna Bwachi. He is the Ashanti Regional Secretary of the Small Scale Mine, Ghana National Association of Small Scale Miners. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News. Hello.
Hello, good evening.
Yes, what happened in Kumasi?
All right, thank you and a very good evening to all your listeners. We had planned already as an association to hit the street on the 12th, that is today. We sent a letter to the police indicating as to when we would want to hit the street. It was approved. The routes were given to us by the police. We complied with every rules they gave us. Last night, we went to rent the sports stadium, that is Heroes Park, about a week before. As we were erecting our tent and then arranging some chairs, officials of the sports stadium came and informed us that they've been given an order from above to evacuate us from the place. So we ask him, why is it so? The only thing he could tell us was, if you want to use the facility, we should go and inform the Ashanti Regional Minister or call some executives in Accra. We didn't want to create any route or any misunderstanding between the two of us, so we had to move out of the place. Soon after we left the stadium to book for another location, the regional commander also called and informed us that they cannot assist us in our demonstration. So we should either postpone it.
You mean the regional police commander called you?
Exactly.
Okay.
So I asked him the reasons why we think we cannot embark on the demonstration. And he informed me that there has been some issues in and around Kumasi. So they are short of men. But earlier in the afternoon, that was yesterday, on a meeting with the ACP in charge of operations at the regional headquarters, he made mention of those incidents, but then we agree that he's bringing his men to help us demonstrate peacefully. It baffled our mind a bit. So we told him that we have already arranged for our members to come. So what we can do is we can assemble them, brief them on the latest happenings, and then let them go back to their various places. It was even difficult for the police to understand us on that level. But then, since some of our members had already set off, they came. And when they came, the police also came around. I was expecting to see a few number of police since they informed us that they have set of men. They've deployed them to various places. But to my surprise, about more than 100 policemen came.
And we understand some of your members were arrested. Is that true?
Yes, that is true.
How many?
5 of them.
And what were their charges?
Okay, I understand that one member was playing in the mud, and I don't know if it was unfortunate. Some of it spilled on a police officer. So he had to be arrested. And upon the police officers arresting him, I wasn't there, but that's where I hid.
Okay. So they were
beating him up, and some other people were taking a video.
All right. Our time is running now. So where does this leave you? Do you intend organizing another demonstration, or are you giving up?
We will never give up. The regional police command has indicated that we can embark on this demonstration coming Friday.
Okay. So it means Friday you are likely to go on the demonstration?
Today, some group of people came to where we were having the briefing. And they informed us that they are coming from the office of the president.
Okay.
Upon negotiations with them, they told us that the president says we should wait till the end of the month.
All right. Unfortunately,
we don't want to rely on what he told us.
Okay.
We have to tell him that he should inform the president that if it is true, he should come out officially
to say
and let the whole Ghana know what he
is. Mr. Abuachi, we certainly will have to come to you on this issue before Friday. But thank you very much for your time on our show. We are very grateful. Kwamna Abuachi is the Ashanti Regional Secretary of the Ghana National Association of Small Scale Miners. And this is all we have for tonight's edition of Behind the News. My producers have been Seth Eyia, John Pobi, Belland, Elom Tete, and John Adoko Akampale. Our sound engineer has been Osei Balobi. I am George Asikri. God willing, same time tomorrow, we may be here. Good night.